Welcome to At the Organ, a weekly show about the classical organ and its music, heard on organlive.com every Sunday or streaming from our website anytime. Just point your browser to attheorgan.com for more information. Now, let's hear what's happening this week at the organ.
Hi, and thanks for joining me this week on At the Organ. In today's episode, we hear the second part of our interview with organist and professor Gail Archer, as she talks about her performances and educating organists today. Welcome to At the Organ. My name is Brent Johnson. This week's episode is a continuation of last week's. 2 weeks ago, the Episcopal Church of St. Peter in Ladue, Missouri, was in the midst of celebrating 10 years since the installation of their Mander organ. We have uploaded a short video of organist and choirmaster Bill Aitken talking about how this organ came about and how he came to choose Mander organs of London, England to build the instrument. You can find that video on our website, attheorgan.com. As part of the anniversary, the church invited Gail Archer to present a recital on the instrument. Dr. Archer is college organist at Vassar College and director of the music program at Barnard College at Columbia University. She serves as director of the Artist and Young Organ Artist Recitals at Historic Central Synagogue in New York. Bruce Ludwig went out to St. Peter's and talked with Gail in the sanctuary of that church. If you missed the first part of the interview with Gail, you can find it, again, on our website at theorgan.com. Now, here's Bruce.
Let's speak about you more generally, too, as a recording artist, as a pedagogue, as a musician, and as a performer. What ideas, above all others, do you wish to impart to your audiences with these recordings, but then also with live performances as well?
I'm always trying to put music together that's complementary and diverse at the same time. I like to play things that are a little off the beaten path. We were teasing earlier about so many artists playing Wiehren and Vidor, great big toccatas and organ symphonies and all of that. And it's beautiful music, but I haven't played much of it because it's played so much. So I am interested in German romantics. I'm interested in modern composers. I've done quite a bit of early music before Bach. That's actually my first recording was Sveelinck, these old Dutch composers. My mother's family name is Wielenga. We are from Friesland, I'm proud to say. We're from the Netherlands. So I'm interested in early music. There's so much of that that is little known, and I'm interested in unequal temperament and old instruments, and I've played a good bit on some historical instruments in Europe. And a lot of that music isn't so well known, and sometimes people will play it with such a bland registration. You know, here's old Dutch music on an 8-foot flute. Well, gee, I really have an appointment. I have somewhere to go. I'm not going to sit through this, you know? It's just not very interesting. But those instruments were spicy. They had lots of mutations and very nasal pungent reeds, and I think we can make a great deal stronger case for early music by making the registrations really match the old instruments that are still there. And not everyone's had a chance to play on the old instruments, but I have, fortunately. So I'm keenly interested in early music, and then I'm keenly interested in newly composed music, modern music. I'm always interested in hymnody in one way or another, because I grew up singing in church choirs. So I have a wealth of hymn tunes in my mental archives. So I'm always inspired by people who look to that literature to base instrumental music on hymn tunes, and have commissioned some pieces this year, in fact, from a guy from Memphis who won a Guggenheim several years ago, Hayes Biggs. So he wrote me a trilogy on wonderful hymn tunes that I'm very excited to premiere in New York this spring. So I guess I'm looking off the beaten path, because that really educates your audience. We can't play Wiehren and Vidor all the time. We do have to play Schumann and Joan Tower and Fanny Mendelssohn's organ piece that absolutely nobody knows or cares about. I think you have to search further afield to keep an audience coming back, that there's going to be a surprise in the program. There's going to be a piece based on octatonic scales, not on Western scales. So I'm always looking to have something old, something new, something borrowed, something blew up, but I'm not getting married. I'm just playing the organ.
Well, it sounds like though with the breadth of inspiration you have as a performer and a recording artist, though, that and all these interesting topics that maybe even some listeners may be unfamiliar with, such as the unequal temperament, and also, you know, as you mentioned, with more contemporary things like octatonic scales. What as an instructor on the organ, as a teacher, as a pedagogue, you mentioned you're trying to impart something to audiences. It sounds like you really have a lot of breadth of experience to impart to your students. Can you tell us about how this extremely wide range of interest helps you to communicate to them, your students?
That's a lovely question. I'm a teacher by trade. I came into it because I chose it. It's a vocation. So I'm teaching music history, and I'm directing choirs at the university. But yes, indeed, I do have organ and harpsichord students, particularly at Vassar College, where I serve as organist. And I'm building a studio there. We have two instruments, the big Gress Miles in the chapel and the Paul Fritz in the music building. And I go back and forth with them. We have two lessons back-to-back on the Fritz, and then two lessons back-to-back on the big romantic organ. There are practice organs. There are four harpsichords. So I require the students to do early music for the Fritz. And we play Bach and before, and then we play our César Franck and Mendelssohn and modern music over on the chapel organ. And everybody, even if they're rank beginners being converted over from piano to organ, still have, I find, pieces from the complete literature and make everybody play some Wieland, some Mozart. No, Mozart's wrong. Some Franck, some Mendelssohn, so that everyone is playing some early music and everyone is playing some modern music. And it's the best way to introduce people because it keeps their interests alive. Wow, this is all organ music? Well, yes, it is. It's not just narrow literature at all. It's a huge literature. And to open windows to style and harmony and schools of thought about the organ. And that's what makes the teaching so exciting. I also played flute. I played harp when I was younger. So I always am talking about other instruments in relation to the organ, because that helps a great deal in teaching articulation and fingering and old fingering practices, which I'm always teaching all these 2-3 and 3-4 kinds of old ways to approach scales. And I can teach that beautifully on the Fritz organ, and then teach more traditional pedaling, 19th century pedaling on a concave pedal board. And then we have the flat Dutch pedal board over on the Fritz. So the students are learning the pedal technique. So I have a wealth of resources where I happen to be teaching organ, and it lets me put all this information together to the, I hope, the enrichment and the benefit of the young people who come to study organ.
That's wonderful. And as we look at these very interesting things you're teaching to your students, one of the wonderful things now with preponderance of social media and even of print sources being available on the internet and mm-hmm. so on, there is maybe a greater exposure if people only look on things like the early fingerings or temperaments, or, you know, even things that deal with more modern repertoire in their performance. Can you tell us, though, maybe if there is something that we might be less well-equipped as organists if we're coming to you to study? Do you notice weaknesses in students as far as, you know, maybe technical deficiencies, but also in the ear, for example, people, you know, just not used to hearing certain things that you're looking for them to hear? And can you tell us about how you try to overcome those obstacles?
Well, a lot of my rank beginners are pianists and have no idea how to register anything. So you have, since I have the two instruments, I talk a great deal about color and registration and what makes Mendelssohn sound well on the big romantic organ, but how we can also bring Mendelssohn over to the Fritz and play some music from the early 19th century on an unequal temperament and have it come out sounding really convincing, depending on what we choose to use as the registration, and stick to principles and flutes and maybe judiciously add some kind of a reed, but not that Dulcian that's on the swell on the Fritz organ, because that's Baroque. I mean, that's a Baroque oboe. Then no way getting around it. We wouldn't want to add that into the registration when we bring Mendelssohn over there. So I love teaching registration and showing how you can add mutations to Baroque registrations to make that sound more like an Arpschnitger organ or a or a Silbermann, Gottfried Silbermann organ, and how you can also do that on a romantic instrument. Okay, so you're in a place where you have to play Bach on a big romantic and a Moller, you know, really sort of very traditional American kind of instrument, and you can use reeds and you can use mutations to make the instrument itself lean Baroque, even though you're not playing on a Baroque style instrument. So a good bit of my teaching is trying to make the music sound as colorful and as compelling as it possibly can be, given the resources you end up with when you get your job at the Methodist Church, and this is the organ you have in front of you. How can you still make it sound like the Paul Fritz organ at Vassar? And this is how you do it. So I'm always teaching them how to mix and match. It's like dressing well. You know, you put some particular tie with a particular shirt, and you make it work for today. And I think the more flexible, the more information that young people have about the style, the period style, and I mean that across the board from the 17th century to the present, to make the music sound as much like the resources of the period. And that takes a knowledge of registration and orchestral technique and chamber music from a period. I really make them put on their earphones and listen to a wide range of music. That's always being historically aware. Organ music in context, not organ music separated from the rest of the musical culture of any given era. And that's a big part of my teaching.
Well, it certainly sounds like the students then will have a wealth of experience from a mechanical action organ to an electric action organ and everything in between that might help them as students. And you mentioned putting on our earphones. So as an audience member, for example, let's continue on this similar vein. What are our weaknesses maybe as a 21st century audience when we go to hear a concert of organ music, or when we go and click our mouse to get on the computer to listen to one of your recordings that's live but available for us on demand on the internet? What would you suggest maybe as a remedy to certain weaknesses in our 21st century ear?
That's a really sensitive and provocative question. I think audiences generally want to hear nice Brahms and Beethoven and Mozart symphonies, right? Everybody wants to hear the tunes they know and can sing along with. Se voi ballare, signor Contino. You know, we all want to sing along. And I think that's because familiarity is something we all appreciate. You know, we want to go home and be in our familiar community and see things around us that are familiar. So that's got to be the point of departure on a program. One wants to have something that's familiar to the audience. But then we have a responsibility to teach beyond that. And the greatest weakness in all musical audiences, adventurous programming of modern music, newly composed music. That's always the stretch. And people are taking a risk because if you need to sell tickets to a very large hall for orchestral or opera companies across the United States and around the world, they have to be careful about scheduling modern music and have to make sure they juxtapose it with the traditional literature that is familiar to everyone. So that's the biggest challenge for all musical, classical musical organizations or individuals. We have to be educating the audience to listen to new voices and somehow bring them along by trying to mix the programs, have some romantic elements, some early music, some, you know, very contemporary music that stretches people's imagination. And I want to say that in a positive way. Some people are turned off by contemporary music. There's not a melody they can go out singing. Oh dear, there's so many rhythmic elements here, or using scales or clusters of sounds that make it an unfamiliar territory and tougher to hum along. That's part of our culture. It's a very spiky, instantaneous, and sort of musical vignettes like that are a response to the world around us. And so we have to open ourselves to listening to modern voices. That's the big challenge.
I feel like you've had a lot of good to tell us about how to listen as a concert audience too, whether it's these things that we're talking about, or even mentioning that these recordings that you've done and distributed as MP3s on the internet are live, then people maybe will realize that, you know, things sound different, or maybe they'll even expose other disc recordings that are ruthlessly edited.
Yeah.
But getting away from those issues then, and sort of wrapping things up, can you tell us something that you want us to hear as an audience, or that you want us to be able to tell our friends who will listen, so that when we think Gail Archer, organist, what are we listening for? What do you have to say that you want us to hear as a common thread through all these performances, diverse as they are?
That's a wonderful and sensitive question. I love music. I've been singing all my life and playing all my life. And my principal aim is to give back, to inspire, to comfort, to lift up, to send people away filled with joy. The whole point of playing music live is to comfort and just give the very best, the essence of who you are as a person. It's in its highest form. It's really loving others and having a sympathy for them and wanting to give something to make their day brighter, more full of joy, more fulfill. Fulfillment is a great part of that. Part of the reason people listen to beautiful music is so that they have the courage to face the challenges, the adversity in their lives. And classical music can do that. It can lift people up in untold ways without words and give people that wonderful fulfillment in life that makes life richer in every possible way, that no recording can substitute for being in the space with the live musicians, which give that direct gift from one person to another. And that's my aim, to give that musical gift to others.
You're listening to At the Organ.
Special thanks this week go to Gail Archer, Bruce Ludwig, Bill Aitken, and the staff of St. Peter's Episcopal for their cooperation in this interview. And thanks to Gregory Caldwell for production assistance. Later that evening, Gail spoke from the console of St. Peter's Organ to the St. Louis chapter of the American Guild of Organists. Since we have some time, I'd like to play a few bits from that evening.
On the recital yesterday, I played the F-sharp minor preludium of Buxtehude, and that gives me a chance to take you on an organ tour, so, and talk about registration, how you can make any organ lean Baroque. You can have a molar, folks, and make it lean Baroque. You can't believe that that's true, but it is. In any case, so the beginning of this piece, the opening large statement, I have 8-foot principal, 4-foot, 2-foot, the mixture. One of the key ingredients to making things lean Baroque is to add the mutations. Any kind of Nazard, Tierce, Sesquialtera, add it to the planum, because that's the spice in the sauce. So don't hesitate. I've also got the trumpet in this thing, and there's a stop diapason, which is a flute, I would imagine. But that's the planum, 8-4-2, the mixture, the cornet and the trumpet. And then I took those same things off the other manuals. From the swell, I've got a sesquialtera on there too. The more you can make it quinty, the more pungency you're going to have. And don't be afraid to use the heavy artillery downstairs. Use your 16-8 for the mixture. And then I've got both the 16 and 8-foot reed on the bottom, so you can really take the house down. Folks, nothing. That's 8-4-2 in the mixtures in a reed. Listen to it with the sesquialtera. Just get that much more, and that's exactly what you want. The next section is homophonic. There are many sections in Buxtehude that it's like a hymn. do something interesting with the bottom. You can have just an 8-foot reed, and in this case, I used a little one. I took the crumb horn off the positif and brought it downstairs, and then warmed it up with the flute, so I get this. It's wonderful. Somebody this afternoon in the radio interview said, oh yeah, I'm a bassoonist. I said, oh yeah, so am I. It's terrific. So I have flutes in the hands, 8-4 and 2-foot flutes all the way around, from the swell and from the great, and then I'm using this reed off the choir. You've got this nice little consort idea, because obviously he's living most of his life in the 17th century, and the idea of having consorts of instruments, a group of shawms, a family of recorders, a family of viols, the idea of little instrumental ensembles. You don't need 16 foot downstairs all the time. And that crumb horn is wonderful. You have a crumb horn playing the bottom, like a dulcian, like a little fagotto kind of instrument, and flutes on the top, and it really makes for such a colorful registration. Then in the fugue that follows, I made a bigger cornet. I only have one mixture in that. It's, in fact, on the swell organ, I didn't even use any principals. I've got it built with the 8-foot oboe, 4-foot principal, 2-foot, 2-foot, so there's your 8-4 and 2, mixture and the sesquialtera. I'm not using any flutes at all or principals to build that on, and I'm coupling that into 8-4-2 and the cornet here. So I'm not using the mixture off the grate. I'm using the mixture over here, but lots of quinty stuff, and it's bigger than what I was doing before. Trumpet and an 8-foot principal. It's bigger than the idea in the previous section where I was using the little baby reed, the little crumb horn with a flute. So make use of your reeds in a creative way. Now I've got a whole big tubby bassoon on the bottom. It's bigger. Or the idea of a trombone. But again, you don't need 16 foot all the time in these pieces. It weighs them down. Think about them more in terms of consort ideas. I'll play a little further in the same section. Think Buxtehude is boring. If you do them all with little flutes and stuff, it's deadly. So just put lots of spice in your sauce and you'll be great. The next section, I do it completely differently. I do this much more fluty so that the flutes contrast with the sesquialteras in the previous one. Different color in each of the sections, and every one of Buxtehude's pieces is written in sections. So register every single one differently. Go from flutes to a little reed. Okay, sesquialtera kinds of things, a big cornet with a bigger reed. Then go to flutes, go to principals. Keep mixing it up the whole time so your audience is left guessing. That's the whole point. Keep them guessing. And there are wonderful echo things in this piece, too. And then for the big improvisation after that, I go back to the first sound I had.
Thank you.
that stuff and not feel that you have to play in time either. You can take time on the big chords and stretch stuff out, give it a good taffy pull, and don't play one, two, three, four. Let it loose a little bit. The only time when you have to really play in time is when he goes back into the 16th note stuff. And the anything that's his manualiter, I typically will take on the swell or on the positive and then come back to the great only when he adds the pedal, which is what I do here. The idea of playing as colorfully as you can play is the strongest recommendation I can give. And the same is true of the earlier Dutch music. You can start with principles 8 and 4, but then on another variation, do just 4-foot flutes. On another variation, do some kind of a small cornet built on flutes, then do a bigger cornet based on principles. Add reeds as your put the reed on first, put the trumpet on, leave out the 8-foot principle, add the czar tears 4-foot, 2-foot, the mixtures go all the way up, but don't use the principles at all on a registration. You can do it really effectively on this organ because you've got all of that over here on the, you can use a trumpet on the bottom of it, there we go. There. That's a very Dutch registration. I've got the 8-foot trumpet on 4-foot principal, 2-foot mixture in the sesquialtre. It makes an absolutely beautiful sound for any kind of swelling variations, and you should be brave about that. Don't play it on some little flute. Add the mutations and add the reeds. And I don't do this in Buxtehude. I use modern fingering here. But in any music before that, in Scheidemann, in Scheidt, in Sveiling, in Melchior Schilt, any students of Sveiling's other people, there were a family of Praetorius family, Hieronymus Praetorius, there's a whole gang of them, some of whom studied with Sveiling, some of whom were cousins and brothers. But this wonderful literature that's early keyboard music. And there on the scales, I really do use 3-4 and 2-3 all the way down. 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4, 4-3-2-1. I don't do thumb under at all. The place where that's documented is CPE Bach's book, The True Art of Playing Keyboard Instruments, which is published in 1753. In that book, Carl Philipp Emanuel says, I put my thumb under as my father taught me. I think that's a sure sign of something, folks. And we know from reading that Bach himself, Johann Sebastian, he went over from the old fingering about 1715, give or take. And that's when C.P. Bach's book, which is in paperback, folks, go run out and buy it. It's tough reading. You can't read it all at once, but it's got all the old fingerings and all the new fingerings in it, too. It's got 1-2-3 thumb under, but it also has the 3-4, 3-4, 2-3, 2-3. All those fingers on scales in mad detail in that book, The True Art of Playing Keyboard Instruments. So you can just go on Amazon and Google it and buy it up, because there it is. And all the information is there about scales. The other interesting thing about that book is that it's the link between the old world and the new, because we know that Mozart and Haydn knew C.P. Bach's book. They recommended it. I think it was Haydn that said it was the school of all schools, and it's very well documented that Ludwig van Beethoven would not teach anybody piano without a copy of C.P. Bach's book under their arm. He insisted that everybody bring it to every single lesson. So that's the big changeover from Baroque technique to what we think of as Romantic pianism, is C.P. Bach's book. Because he's summing up the Baroque, but he's also propelling it off into the future because the instruments were growing larger.
Thanks for joining me this week on At the Organ. And remember, if you want to hear the first part of the interview with Gail Archer, it is available on the October 30th episode, which you can find on our website, attheorgan.com. I'm Brent Johnson, and I'll meet you here next time at the Organ.
You've been listening to At the Organ, a weekly look at the art and music of the classical organ. We'd love to hear your comments about the show. Send your email to info@attheorgan.com or just go to our website where you can comment on the show. There you can also hear this week's show again or find back episodes. The address is attheorgan.com. The Organ is a production of the Organ Media Foundation. For more information about supporting the foundation or sponsoring an episode of At the Organ, go to organmedia.org. Thank you for listening, and we'll meet you here next week at The Organ.